Real people.
Real celebrities.
Real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Special guest in the building, one of my favorite artists. Highly underrated, in my opinion.
Luda!
Hell
Luda.
To the yeah.
How the hell you underrated? You sold 20 million records.
No, you know what? He sold 20 million. I want to say he sold 20 million quietly.
Man, shut
up. I'm serious.
There's no such thing.
You can't say. People don't respect his lyricism. I think
Well, say that.
Well, give me a chance to.
This sounds personal. It sounds like you don't respect
First of all, he couldn't have sold 20 million quietly if I knew about it.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, that's a good point right there. That's definitely a good point.
Well, Luda's here.
It feels good to be back.
What's
feels
up, sir?
Good to be back.
You still with good. The same crew. I like seeing you when you come around because I always see Shaka.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And for all the money y'all made, you'd have thought y'all would have fell out by
And
now.
By the way, we've never had a signed contract ever in our lives.
Come
What's
on.
Going on?
Get out of
never.
Here.
So really? I know y'all get a lot of artists in here. I'm here to let y'all know we've never signed anything. That's loyalty right there.
What?
That's dope.
Absolutely.
No 10%, Shaka?
10%.
So what do you give
him? Come on now. You know
is it a standard 10%?
Nah, he gets a percentage, but you know, that's what we don't have to talk about that.
Oh,
he
wow.
gets a percentage, okay. But the fact of we've never had to do any paperwork because that's how strong the
so,
bond
Shaka,
is.
So, Shaka, you don't do paperwork with nobody. No, I'm playing with you.
Yeah. Yes. All right.
Oh, did I mess up? I might have messed up.
Now, how do you trust somebody in the beginning? Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, how do you trust somebody to say that?
We came from the same humble beginnings. We came from the same radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't, you know what it is? It's like, I literally feel like he's my family. Even though we're not blood, we are family. And I know family goes through certain things. So at the end of the day, it is what it is. But I was right. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? We've gone this long and we still don't need any paperwork.
Y'all ain't never fight, never tussle, never nothing serious.
No, we've never had to. Really? We've never had to. We've had some extremely great conversations where we can agree to disagree on certain things, but in terms of fighting, nah.
What Shaka used to do at the station? That was one of the best things ever. That was Hot 97.9, right?
Yeah. He was Hot 97.5. He was the music director.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep. And this was back in the days when, you know, we it was like a house, so we didn't have any money. This is right when Radio 1 started.
Right.
And so there was no money, and you know, we had to kind of keep some things around us. And he used to do the 10-to-2 shift mm-hmm. at night.
Okay.
So of course, you know, it was just like it wasn't any rules whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, we're trying to bring up a movie script about that, and so pretty soon we're gonna shed some light on this radio
thing.
So
when they
were
playing all them Ludacris records, that was kind of payola in a way.
Nah, they wasn't. look, that was.
There was no rules.
Let me tell you something. That was the day I know I made it because I had to fight so hard to get my records played. Not only on the station because they made me work for it.
Right.
The day I knew I made it is when they played my record on the opposing station on the competition. So you know that's why I was like. V103.
Yeah.
Let me just say shit right.
Hey, man, we're syndicated now. It's all
I know,
blood,
man. You're getting too much money for me right now. I don't know what's going
too.
On.
If you work at the station and you're doing music, it kind of feels like we can't just play this guy's record because then people think it's...
That's exactly what it was. It was the exact opposite of what people would think. It's like you would think they would support me to a degree, but they made me work for it because they didn't want anybody at the station feeling like they just playing his record because he works here. And so, you know, that was part of the grind coming up.
That probably
is what it is.
Made you a better artist, though.
100%. Anything that I go through makes me a better artist when it comes to, you know, challenging me.
Now, is this your last album on Def Jam?
I got one more after this, man. And you know what? I'm going to tell you right now, I will never take 5 years off to drop an album ever again.
Okay. I didn't realize it was 5 years. I didn't realize you had been in the game for 15 years.
Yeah. I missed myself during this time. I hadn't realized it's been that long either. But, you know, it's like, besides the Fast 5, Fast 6, Fast 7, for the first time in my life, you know, it's like I dropped damn near 7 consecutive albums.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I just wanted to take a little time off. I wanted to enjoy the fruits of my labor.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to travel the world. You know what I mean? I wanted to spend some of this money. And by doing that, I kind of lost contact a little bit. So I had to kind of bring myself back up. And we all know how the music game is right now. It's like the attention span is
out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind. So it's like, of course, people looking at me as more of a movie star mm-hmm. than in music right now. And what it was, I had to dig back in. That's why I started putting out all these little verses. Because mm-hmm. once you hear your favorite rapper or a rapper, you can hear it in his tone and in his aggression, mm-hmm. whether or not he's still hungry or not.
Right.
So I had to start doing it. I dropped the EP, and I did that quietly on purpose because I kind of wanted to just build this foundation and build back up. So to me, this is my 8th album. However, it feels like it's my first. This is a rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start listening to these records, you will completely understand what the hell I'm talking about.
I definitely hear the hunger and call your bluff. It sounds like you're talking to somebody.
Absolutely.
There's no one
person in particular, man. It just gets to a point in rap. And I know you can relate to this. where it's like people's, they talk so hard behind a microphone. And I'm letting everybody know. Mm-hmm. I've never claimed to be the hardest artist or the hardest dude, but when it's like, when you start messing with a man's family or you start messing with him, that's what I say in the record. It's like, you mess with me, you messing with my family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I hate when people talk so tough on the microphone, but you see him in person, and this happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Yes. See him in person, it's like, oh, nah, you know, I ain't mean it like that, or everything's all good, it's just all entertainment. Oh, it's not entertainment. No, I just told you I'm not talking about anybody in particular.
I mean,
me and Drake had our thing, though, but, you know, he came to me and apologized like a man. He said, nah, man, you God body. You God body. That was the first time I heard. This is the first time I heard somebody call me God body. I was like, okay, well, nah, it's all good. Nah, me and Drake are all right, man.
Drake start studying lessons.
I know everybody wants to write Drake off as that dude, but we okay. We all right.
How did you feel when he said your name in that How About Now? When he said he was playing his music for the chicken. The chicken was like, oh, turn that off. You listen to Ludacris.
Yeah, you know
what?
That,
I don't know.
Nah, you know what's crazy is I think it's a little bit of a true story behind that. And
his girl was listening to Ludacris. He was a little sick.
And that's why he don't.
His girl at the time, with all due respect, was probably doing a little bit more than that. But it's a true story. And I think that's why he said that. And, you know, people can respect this man for being very honest on records.
Yeah, he's very open.
Yeah. And it was a chick in Toronto. And at the time, I didn't even know that she was. You know, I didn't know what was going on.
Drake's girl, man. My goodness.
It's not his fault. He didn't know.
No, absolutely. I did not know.
Right. Yeah,
and that's really what it come down
to.
He
held the grudge all the way to the rap game?
You know, I don't know what's going on, man. Like I said, I don't know, but I do remember that time in the period of my life.
See how women just mess things up?
So that was the thing. Was that the thing when you said y'all squashed your thing? That was the thing?
Yeah. And I mean, he had said some things in public, but then, you know, he apologized privately. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you need to apologize in public the same mm-hmm. way, you know, you said it in public. Mm-hmm. And that was the issue that I had with him. Right. And I'm one of those artists that anybody that knows me, again, I don't claim to be the hardest, but it's like, I'm a man, you know, like it's about respect, man. Right. You can't go and do something publicly and then come and quietly say, oh, you know, I'm sorry. You got to apologize as a man and say it. The same format you put it out on, that's the same format you need to continue on.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean, I'm going to do the same thing.
What?
I'd rather just get swung on.
You want to sue. That's what I think.
I'd rather just swing
hey,
on.
Hey, I'm not mad at that either. I'm down for that, too.
Is that why you took it to the...
Hey, look, Mr. Jim. He's, you know, Luda's in the gym every day, you know.
So, nah, it ain't about
Luda
the gym.
Swing on me. I'm talking about in general. Before I apologize, I'd rather you approach me about it and then say the same thing I said and you swing on me.
I said, listen, man, you haven't helped him this morning.
There's so many people that go to the gym that'll get their ass whooped on a daily basis because muscles don't mean a damn thing. I can walk up to you and kick you in your knee and the fight is almost over because you don't even have your balance. So period.
See, that's the bad thing with rich guys. They've been all around the world. He might be over in China studying some old pressure points you don't know about. You know what I'm saying?
Now we talked about this, man. You over here messing with some street martial arts. You know, I'm messing with some street things too. So, you know, I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Now is that why you in the Call Your Bluff video you took it back to the streets of the A to let people know, like, look,
I'm still out here with the goons.
Man, listen, if it's anything that I love right now is taking it back. Like I called mm-hmm. it, this album is back to the basics, 100%. Mm-hmm. So again, I listen to the fans when they say they want the old Luda. I get that. You know, it's like I can always do that, but at the same time I have to be the new Luda. I have mm-hmm. to be progressive. I have to evolve. There are new things that have happened in my life that I always have to, you know, I pretty much have to talk about. But at the same time, this album is like the old Luda mixed with the new Luda and merging it perfectly together.
Can you really give them old Luda, though? Like, you can't be 25 again. Like, it's different. You're in a different
listen to the
life.
Album. No, I see what you're saying because there's different things to talk about. Yeah. However, I think what they're talking about is the aggression and kind of like the flow patterns and doing different things. So when you hear Call Your Bluff mm-hmm. and you hear me instantly come on there and just start going crazy and just beasting out on people, that's really what it's about. Because I watch the show and I hear y'all constantly talking about how the game is forever changing and ever mm-hmm. evolving. And right now we're in an era where you can pretty much put out just content, music with content, and just flow and just do you. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to worry so much about I need a radio record or I need something that spins mm-hmm. this much.
Dudes is back to rapping.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what this album is. It's back to rapping. It's not trying to format one record to be like this or one record to be like this. This is something you can listen to from beginning to the end, and it's what everybody's wanted me to do mm-hmm. and just beast the hell out.
Because then you have a song like Good Lovin', and then you have a song like Call Your Bluff.
Yeah.
Completely different.
See, Good Lovin' was on the EP, and it just carried over because of its popularity. So that's probably the only record on the album that I would consider, you know, that carried over. But everything else is
that was a very reflective song for you.
It definitely was. I think everybody can relate to that because... Mm-hmm. You know, it's being honest and men talking about their feelings in relationships, because you don't hear that from a man's perspective. So I get more guys coming up to me like randomly saying, yo, I really feel that record than I do girls. And that's crazy because, like I said, you know, guys don't want to admit when they break up with somebody that, look, I didn't mean to break your heart. You know what I mean? And when you, in retrospect, some guys do purposely just completely mess something up. But then there are times where you look in retrospect and you like, I didn't just purposely mean to break you like that. Yeah, and that's really what that record is all about. It's just basically telling you a lot of guys, we're different. You know what I'm saying? Right. In relationships, we going through life, we living in the fast lane, and we don't really understand what we've done until years later. And we look back and like, damn, that was kind of messed up. You know what I'm saying? You know,
at least reminisce about how good the you was.
Absolutely.
Now, when you talk about making radio formatted records, it'd be kind of hard if you got Shaka, who's a former music director.
Right.
He's probably the person telling you, got to make a radio record. You got to make a radio record.
Nah, man, Shaka, you got to understand. Even though
big radio hits, too. Huge hits.
I did, and that's the thing. Like, that's part of the reason. Being in the game 15 years, and we coming up on the 15-year anniversary in October. Being in this game for so long, having so many radio hits, having so many Grammys, having so many... you know, awards and just accolades. It's like, I've done that, and I don't necessarily have to do that again. I just want to give the people what it is that they're asking for, especially since I have one more album after this one on Def Jam.
Now let's. So, I want to talk Def Jam.
Let's talk about Def Jam.
You were talking about you behind
you
your back
the contract
about this.
Early.
Let's
so
do
got,
it.
You got those millions when they're early, but they're not there anymore. So
yeah.
After this,
my contract's still the same.
I know your contract. But
they need to wait for you to be.
But
up.
Go ahead.
So
yeah.
when your contract is over, does it make sense financially to keep Ludacris? You know, they can't afford the big contract. I mean, you was grandfathered in almost.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to give it away, but I just feel like there are so many other opportunities out there. So they would have to really entice me in order for me to continue on. And like we always talk about how the game is changing, I just feel like it's new. There's some new things going on, and it's going to completely change the entire music industry. And I like to stay afloat of what's new, especially because the timing is coming up on me coming out of my contract.
Has anybody disrespected you and asked you to sign a 360 deal?
Hell nah.
You want some of that movie
Hell
money,
nah.
that rising star
that's,
money?
That's when we would have to swing on somebody. For real. Don't ever disrespect me with the 360. Luckily, I came into the game, and a lot of people don't talk about this. I came into the music game where I feel like artists got the most out of juicing the industry. In terms of, I came into the music game where I could sell, Def Jam forecasted me to sell 500,000 records on my first album back for the first time. I went on to sell 3 million. Mm-hmm. Second album, 3 million. Third album, 3 million. People, of course, are not selling 3 million records anymore. Right. So during this era, I could not be more blessed and more thankful that I came into the game at a time where everybody was selling records, getting money from those records, and also doing so many different things. Because nowadays, it's not considered smart to just be a rapper.
All right.
You can't do that.
That's why I didn't even know that you hadn't put out music in 5 years, because, like, honestly, how important is music now? When you're doing movies, when you're doing network television shows, you got a brand. Ludacris is a brand.
It is, but I do feel like music is still important because it's what got me here. You
and
know
it's
what I'm
you're
saying?
Passionate yeah. about too.
I'm Absolutely. Sure. Extremely passionate, and I can never forget what got me here in the first place, and I'll never take 4 or 5 years to drop an album ever again.
Now, it has to be difficult for you because you've been all over the blogs and the tabloids and everything.
Absolutely.
And I know you're not used to that because you are normally a pretty private person.
Yeah.
You know, minding your business when it comes to your personal life. Mm-hmm. So how has that been for you to have to deal with all this public, like going to court?
That's a great question. And what you just said was, I'm not used to it, and I don't like being in those tabloids in that way. And I think that each of us here and everybody watching for that matter, no matter what you don't really like, I feel like the world is going to force you to deal with.
Oh yeah, they want you. You got to address it at least once.
Yeah, no, you do, and I completely understand that. But basically, what I'm saying is, I never was that person, and now this has forced me to become a person that has to kind of sit back. And I love how people hear all these different things, and some of them are true. Mm-hmm. Don't get it twisted. However, a lot of them are untrue. And so since I sit back and just watch, it allows me to have a position of people are judging me based off a lot of things that are not true. And that's you know what's crazy about that? You know what's crazy about that? I absolutely love it because I know the truth. God knows the truth. And as long as that's the case, then it's almost like you get to watch and let people judge you based off of things that you know are not true.
But does it affect your relationship with your home life? Does
absolutely that, not.
That's the best
because
thing.
Because we know the truth. Let me just say that. Myself, my wife, and God, we all know the truth. So with that being said, it's almost entertaining. It's just as entertaining as everybody looking at me being entertained by what they are saying about me. We're just as entertained watching you judge me by listening to this false information.
But sometimes it has to make you want to retaliate. Like, sometimes in your head you have
call
to
call your bluff. Okay,
there you go. Look, there you go. There you go. Come on, Charlamagne. Yeah. I love that. No, it comes through the music. You know, I think we all have situations where we have to use like it's therapy to go do certain things. Some go to the gun range. Mm-hmm. Some go, you know, practice martial arts. And some go box. Some go running and exercise. But for
some
me,
people
it's,
jump on that private jet and just go somewhere else. And
yeah, but I put
away.
It through my music, man. I put it through
hey,
the
as
music.
As a man, I don't know what you did wrong. I mean, if the story is what I heard, you had a baby on a break. So what? You had a baby on a break.
Let me tell you something. I've said this before. I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people out there, no one is perfect. However, everything that I'm going through is perfect for me. Mm-hmm. And it's made me a better person. Mm-hmm. It's made me a better man. And what's to come is going to be the absolute best thing that could ever happen. And it already has happened because a blessing came out of it.
Right.
And I can't necessarily talk, you know, specifics because anything I say can and will be used against me in the court of law.
Yep.
Because there's still current litigation going on. But at the end of the day, just generally speaking, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life.
And you got another baby on the way.
I do. Congrats. I'm trying to catch up with you. This is my goal. Like, I'm trying to catch up with Envy. And,
you got three.
That's really what it came down to, man.
I'm going
to
go one more.
You know, it's crazy because, like, I had an endorsement deal from this company called Breakaway Condoms, and then they pulled out on me at the last minute, so I don't.
But pulled out.
You know, it's just.
now, what made the man.
Can't pull out at the last moment.
They pulled out on me. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
Can you believe that?
What made the man who made What's Your Fantasy? When you talk about having sex in about 1,000 different places,
right.
Finally lock it down and get married.
Man, you know what? I always say this. I think life is about timing. And what I mean by that is there's a time where you could get married and it's not going to be right and you could be the same person and years later you get married and I know you know what I'm talking about and it's going to be right. Mm-hmm. It was just the right timing for me. So,
it took me 17 years. I've been with the same girl 17 years. Finally did it in September.
Damn. Yeah, okay, look. When I say timing, I don't mean that damn long. Like,
now that's ludicrous.
Damn. That is 100% ludicrous. Yeah. Yeah. I applaud you.
I thought you were married already anyway. It was always rumored, oh, they already got married.
Nah, and see, again, that's all, you know, people putting stuff out, and we never feel the need to have to always defend ourselves.
Right.
Because it's entertaining just watching people judge us based off of whatever. But with that being said, it's like, it was that time, man, and I can honestly say that so far, so good, and I hope it continues. So far, so good for you, or you just...
I'm chilling.
Is it, yeah, all right. Is it good,
you don't know your girl yet. Oh, you don't know yet.
Oh, man, I don't know. I'm waiting to find out my damn self.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I heard you got upset at my little bro, Pete Davidson, at the Justin Bieber Comedy Central roast. He made some Paul Walker jokes.
Yeah, let me tell you something, and I wouldn't even repeat those jokes because of how disrespectful I feel they were, but I was definitely upset about that, and... you know, like I was to the point where I was about to go a little crazy. And then all of a sudden, all the executives and producers started lining up, coming to me, apologizing and assuring me that they were going to take those jokes out.
Right.
So, you know, I can respect that. And at the end of the day, those jokes will never see the light of day.
And Tyrese said you guys had a conversation and he was like, it's a good thing I wasn't there because.
Yo, Reese would have. Again, Reese is not that type of person. But when it comes to Paul, with either one of us, because I don't think people know how close we really were to Paul.
Right.
Me and Reese started in Too Fast, Too Furious. And so this was 12 years ago. That was in 2003. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I always tell people, you know, this dude's birthday was one day after mine. We were Virgos. We had the most in common out of everybody. Me and Tyrese are close, but me and Paul were extremely close. And he was one of those individuals where he just wanted to be regular, even though he got these Hollywood checks. Think about it. You would never really see him out and about at different functions or trying to be a certain way. He just liked to be regular. He loved to have fun. He liked to surf. He had a place out in Santa Barbara away from everything. He wanted to keep away from all of the BS.
Right.
And so I'm the same type of way, man. When you see this album cover and you see me driving this 93 Acura Legend and still mm-hmm. having that plane in there. But at the end of the day, I just feel like we had so much in common. And yeah, if Tyrese was there, it would have been a problem.
But you know that's the end. Hold on, so can you lend Creflo Dollar your jet, man?
He's
trying to buy a jet.
And the jet Creflo jet, $65 million, bro.
I'm glad he said that. Because everybody messing with me about having a private plane. And I think I said this last time I was on here. I was like, sometimes we land in different private airports, and I'm like, damn, look at how much bigger that private plane is than mine. And my chef looked at me and said, man,
my chef.
Either you in.
I don't know my plane. Where the chef come from?
My pilot.
He said the chef.
My chef.
My chef looked at me and said, man, either you in the playing game or you not in the playing game. And I can respect that. So I understand. But yeah, I don't know what's going on with Creflo. I think he just wants a bigger jet. He has one. I guarantee he has one. Like
he said, it was old and it something happened. The mechanic,
yeah, he needed a new one.
Yeah,
when it comes to the roast, you know that's the energy of a roast, though.
No, I do, and I hadn't seen that many roasts before I did that one. Gotcha. So I'm gonna be honest with you. It's like I checked out little bits here and there, but apart from the Paul Walker jokes, great roast. And I think it's a great thing for people to get roasted because mm-hmm. a lot of people are scared to be made fun of.
Right.
And I don't take myself too seriously. And I'm just going to tell y'all like this. It's definitely one of the best roasts, if not the best roast that Comedy Central's had, because nobody was safe. Like, mm-hmm. everyone was free game. Mm-hmm. And we cracked on Justin Bieber for hours and hours of time. This was 4 hours worth of material.
Wow.
And they had to condense it down to, I think, 2 hours for television. So, you know, once we were roasting him, he got a chance at the end to go back and get everybody else. So, you know, it was some low blows. You know, they got me. I got some people. You know, you think about this. Snoop was in there. Shaq was in there. Martha Stewart was in there. Everybody was talking about how old she was and how dry her snatch was. You know what I mean? Like, it was some low blows around this piece. Trust me.
Was there ever any hesitation to jump on Bieber's record back in the day? I mean, little white pop singer, baby.
That's a damn good question. And I'm going to tell you why there was no hesitation. Is because I'm one of those artists and I'm one of those individuals that I don't care so much what people think about the decisions that I make. I make decisions based off of how I feel. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that record coming from radio, I knew that it was a hit record. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter to me that he was, you know, 12 or 13 years old. It didn't matter to me that he was white boy. It didn't matter to me any of that stuff. I just listened to the music. Mm-hmm. And so all of us here, it's like, you know, it's not just limited to rap music and hip hop. You know, we listen to all kinds of music. I listen to rock and roll. I listen to 80s hair metal sometimes. So, I mean, like, it's never about the person or how old they are. It's about the music. Mm-hmm. And let alone this song went on to make history. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, till this day, after I endorsed Justin Bieber, then everyone else started endorsing him. You know what I mean?
You
got Kanye, Wu-Tang Clan. Everybody's like cool with Justin Bieber all of a sudden. So
you gave him that first shot. Fever. He caught it messing with Luda.
Yeah, there you have it.
Was it on purpose that you decided to put out Ludaversal the same time Fast and Furious 7? Did you say timing-wise, this is a great idea?
It kind of just worked out that way because a lot of people don't understand that this movie shut down, the production shut down for like 4 to 5 months because of Paul Walker's untimely death. So if I had planned to put it out before that, but this entire 4 to 5 months of production shutting down, it just shifted my entire schedule, an entire year. Because once production shut down, then we had to go back and start shooting the movie again. And that took another 4 to 5 months. So my entire life was kind of shaken. But again, everything happens for a reason and it happened for the better. And what I don't think people really understand also is that he was about 85% done shooting his parts in the film before his untimely death. And yeah, I know people have heard that his brother stepped in and there was a lot of CGI and things that they had to do in order to finish the film. But for the most part, that's only like 2 scenes in the movie. Mm. So when they see this, the integrity is there. And I guarantee when you watch this movie, how we honor him, and it's just the movie is dedicated to this man. But the way that it ends, even the gangster of all gangsters is going to be welling up at the end of this damn movie.
So you're basically telling us he dies in the movie?
Nah, he don't die in the movie.
Okay.
No, actually,
you're making me give it away right now, but he doesn't die in the movie. Okay. But that's what I'm saying. It's done in such a creative way that you still going, it's going to feel a certain type of way about
that. One critic was saying they cried several times throughout the movie.
Man, I'm going to tell you straight up, I'm a grown man. Because I knew him the way that I knew him, the way that they showcased him at the end of this movie, it was over. Right. And I took my 13-year-old daughter to see the premiere in Atlanta. We was both in tears. Mm. Period.
Does it feel real. Because it never, I mean, for me, I don't deal with death well because it never feels real.
I'm the same way.
I don't like going to funerals, none of that, because I don't want to, that's not the last time I want to see
me
a person.
And you have a more in common than I thought, Charlamagne.
does it feel real?
It didn't feel real at first. And then when we flew to LA and went to the crash site, mm-hmm. where I know y'all heard about like fans coming out mm-hmm. and bringing candles and all these different things, and then the family was there, that's when it hit us. And me, Tyrese, Vin, everybody breaking down. Mm-hmm. And it it hurt, man. It hurts to know because it just didn't feel real. And when that moment hit us, we just realized that it is what it is. And how are we going to deal with this?
I asked Tyrese the same question. Is it hard to heal now because you're on the promo tour, you see the commercials all the time, people asking you about them?
It's hard to heal, but the most important thing of why it's the hardest is to see the end of this movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, you know how, they say time heals all wounds. I'm telling you like this. If I watch this movie and watch the end of this movie, no matter how many times I see it, it's going to get the same emotional feeling from me. Like mm-hmm. talking about it, I'm starting to feel a certain way.
Right. Gotcha.
But yeah, it's definitely hard to deal with.
So I was reading also there's going to be like possibly three more after this.
Yeah. First of all, let me just make note, and I don't know if Tyrese said this, I'm glad that the two black men in the movie have not died yet.
That's not a hard movie.
Yeah, because but think about this. If you look at all the different ones, everyone else has died and some of them have come back. Mm-hmm. We in there. Like, this is a beautiful thing right now.
All right, so you don't die in this one.
No, we not dead yet, man. We keeping it alive. And another thing.
Y'all better stay relevant, because as soon as you're not relevant, they're going to bow out you.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm at the Breakfast Club right now. So,
didn't it feel like Luda was ducking us for a little while?
Hell nah. I was just being a father for him. That's all I was doing.
I kept seeing Ludacris is in New York. He's here. He's there. I said, when is Ludacris coming to the Breakfast Club?
I would never duck y'all, man. I come from the radio game, so I completely understand it. But we always let the fans dictate if there's going to be mm-hmm. another one. And we always listen to what they're saying. And right now, it's one of those times where you respectfully have to give kind of a moment of silence. Mm-hmm. You can't just at the end of this movie be like, okay, and here comes the next one. Everything just needs to, like, when you see the end of the movie, you'll understand what I'm saying. It's just like, let's just chill for a second. Mm. If there is to be another Fast and Furious, then let a little time go past before we just up and just go back and do it.
Now let's talk sports. Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
You're betting on Floyd.
Listen to me, man.
How much you putting up? Look, this is going to be a tough one.
No, I do. I love that. But I'm a little biased, and I'll tell you why. Mm. I did a video with Roger Mayweather and Floyd a way back, and I was able to train with Roger Mayweather, and I was able to go to the gym, and this was maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. So fast forward, I had a show in Vegas about 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I went back to the gym to go holler at everybody. And when I went there, it just so happened that Floyd was in there about to spar with somebody, and I didn't know who, but I see the gym filled up. Mm-hmm. I know this is his second week of training camp, and I'm kind of like, this is going to be his hardest fight. So as soon as I walk in there, I see Zab Judah over there to the side putting his gloves on.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm looking and I'm like, okay, so that's what's going on. I happen to get there right on time because as soon as I got there, 2 minutes later, they in the ring. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you all know that Zab Judah is southpaw. Mm-hmm. So we know that he's fought this man before. And again, this was only 3 rounds because they just sparring. They got the headgear on. They got everything. So I'm at the side of the ring and I'm just watching this fight, and I'm just extremely happy that I just so happened to come on the day and the time when both of these are fighting, because I just wanted to see, I wanted to look in Floyd's eyes. I got a chance to say what up to him, and it's like the same way I keep talking about rappers. When you hear their tone and their aggression, you can tell whether they're hungry or not. Mm-hmm. When you look in a fighter's eyes mm-hmm. and you feel that energy, mm-hmm. you realize where he's at. Floyd has never been a punk when it comes to training camp, mm-hmm. period. I have never in my life seen him this focused and training this hard. So let's just say if he usually runs 5 or 6 miles a day, he's running 8 or 9 miles a day. Mm. If he usually is in the gym and he's sparring and he's, working out and exercising for 4 or 5 hours, he's doing 6, 7 hours. He knows that everything is on the line.
So tell us what happened with Zab and Floyd now.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened with Zab. I don't know if this. I saw the TV camera, so I don't know if I'm gonna get in trouble for telling what's happening or if it's actually gonna come on one of them 24/7 joints. But the first round, Floyd did like he always does in a real fight. Mm-hmm. Took it easy, kind of studied, see where Zab is at. Second round, you start to see Zab Judah getting a little fatigued, mm-hmm. and then Floyd started getting a little more aggressive and getting a little more comfortable. third round, it's a wrap. Zab is definitely all the way fatigued, and then Floyd Mayweather is just taking advantage of him at that point.
Well, Pacquiao actually be fatigued by the third round.
And that's what I was going to say. I'm telling you like this. The thing about this fight is we all know that the first three rounds, Floyd Mayweather, he kind of takes it easy and he studies. But the only thing about this fight is he has to be a little more aggressive because we all know that Pacquiao is going to throw punches.
Right.
And this is about points. And so if he's not going to knock this man out, then you have to get more points than him. So – Pacquiao's going to be throwing, and I feel like Floyd knows that he has to throw some stuff, too. And if Pacquiao wants to knock Mayweather out, it has to happen in the first three rounds.
Right.
If you're going to stagger him, if you're going to do anything that is going to completely mess up the rest of the rounds, it has to be in the first three rounds.
How much you put up, Floyd though? Adjusts,
period.
How much you put up, though? How much you put up, though?
Hey, man, I got kids to take care of. I ain't putting up no money right now, man. I'm good. I ain't betting on this one.
You know what I always wondered about you, Luda? Did you ever, or did you and your team ever say, let's cross over? Or did everything happen organically?
I think, honestly, we never said we need to cross over. I think everything happened organically. Like, when I got in the studio with Timbaland and did Roll Out, and that was like a crossover song. Or when I got in the studio with Kanye and I did Stand Up, and that crossed over, it was all organic in the studio. Mm-hmm. We weren't just sitting there saying we want to cross over. None of that ever happened. So I think it was just a combination of me doing a lot of feature songs and just me doing me. That's the one thing that I can say is that we never were like, we need to do this type of record.
Yeah, because none of those were traditional radio records. Move, Bitch.
Exactly.
Southern Hospitality, Stand Up. Those aren't sing-songy, hooky, traditional.
And that's where the best music comes from, when someone is not trying to make a specific type of record, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's when people change music, is when you are doing you. Like, I feel like Kendrick Lamar is one of those individuals. And it's like now he's got a certain amount of followers where now he can put out whatever he wants and people are pretty much going to follow it. But you think about putting out albums that you can listen to from beginning to end and putting out content. That's what it's about right now. So the last time you asked me kind of like what I wanted to be remembered by and, you know, how I want to be known, and it's versatile. Mm-hmm. So if times change up, I can change up with the times. And when I tell you this Ludaverso album is a testament of how extremely hungry and how great I can change with the times in terms of being myself and still being fluid and beasting out, that's what this is all about. And speaking of beasting, you know, we talking about sports and all that. I had Marshawn Lynch. Mm-hmm. You know, we just shot a video to a song called Beast Mode that's on my album, and literally there's no hook. It's just all bars, mm-hmm. bars, metaphors, and everything. It's 3 minutes straight. So we shot a video. I met this dude for the first time and felt like I'd known him for all of my life. Mm-hmm. So I have a new friend. We was just out in L.A. together, and this is another guy that inspires me. So the same way he's, you know, mowing down people on the field, that's how I feel like I do in the rap game. And we were shooting this video, and I had to ask him. I was like, yo, why didn't they give you the damn ball?
What was his answer?
Marshawn said, yo.
Marshawn was like, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't give me the damn ball. I was wondering the same damn thing. So, you know, it's just funny, man. It's interesting to get perspective from so many different people. And I love that I'm friends with people that I look up to and that inspire me.
You wrote that song directly because of Marshawn Lynch?
He just inspired it. And I was just like, everybody say they want Ludacris to beast out. So I was like, let me just beast mode. Let me just go out.
Do you tell anybody, though? Because I was watching
a lot of people.
I was watching an old YouTube video, that old show Meth and Red had. Stung.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to explain to somebody how Punk stole that idea from Meth and Red.
They did, man. Thank
the
you.
Whole idea.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I'm like, why Luda just ain't telling him the beat was whack?
Let me tell you why. Because I was fresh in the game. Mm-hmm. I had just got started. And if there were any two individuals that I looked up to more, there's nobody that I feel like Redman was one of my favorite rappers.
You fruit off that tree.
Absolutely. That in common. So with Method Man and Redman together, I was kind of in a fan zone. So I wanted to believe that they wanted me on this record.
Right.
And so this is how they premised it, and this is how they edited that particular version to make me believe it. But then when you saw it on TV, it just made me look a little crazy. However, so they told me, they was like, this is for the movie How High. Mm-hmm. So everybody's smoking weed in this particular scene.
Gotcha.
So it makes sense for it to be crazy and you hear a frog noise. So this is how they premised it. Mm-hmm. But then when they showed it on television, they cut through all of that stuff and was just like Ludacris rapping over a frog beat, and that's what it is. But they made me believe it. I'm telling you, bro.
I remember reading that Redman was supposed to have that role you had in in Fast and Furious originally.
I don't know. I never heard
Listen,
that.
I don't know. I'm in all.
Hey man, look, I'm.
I don't know what's
you
want
to sting me?
If there's anything I can say is that I'm sure any actor would kill to be in a franchise like this, where you know you got another paycheck on the way without you really having to do anything. But
is it retirement money?
I mean, definitely, man. You know, it all depends. You know what? At the end of the day, it depends on what people do with their money. People can have millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not about how much money you make. It's about how much money you spend, man. That's the one thing that anybody with money has to learn.
Absolutely.
And as y'all continue to get 4, 5, 6, 7 jobs a piece, I'm sure you understand what the hell I'm talking about.
Them kids will take it, though. I'm telling you.
They'll take it, but all them cars you got will take it, too, man. Your ass over there, man. Look, man, if anything depreciates, it's them damn cars when you drive them off the lot, so you need to chill out, man. Let me tell you something. I follow all of y'all on Instagram. I had to stop following Envy, and I'm just going to tell him to his face right now. I apologize to you. It's too many damn advertisements on this dude's Instagram, man.
You gotta pay for them cars.
But you know what is you know, with me is big business. Like, you know, I especially with the dealerships.
Yeah.
You know, is if you're a DJ and you have a strong following and you could promote their dealership, they might give you a car for a year.
I agree.
So, you know, sometimes it's not what you think somebody's spending on, it's them being smart.
No, that is smart.
I always think that though.
That is smart.
A real man would never let a man let them have a car for a year. You need
it's
to
like
boss up
man's
and buy
lap.
A car.
You know what?
Hey.
Okay.
Ludacris, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold up, though. Hold up. On that subject, let me say one thing. I'm gonna divulge a secret to everyone in the industry about money. I don't usually do this, but this is the Breakfast Club, so I feel the need to do this. And I'm gonna let you in on a real secret. You know, people make fun of individuals in rap music for leasing cars. Mm-hmm. In the music industry, if you are a rapper and you travel a lot, leasing a car is the smartest thing that you could ever do. Let me tell you why. Because they only give you a certain amount of miles to drive, and it's way lower than actually buying the car. Mm-hmm. Ludacris, I own a lot of cars. However, I lease a lot of cars, too. You know why? Because I'm on the road so much, I never use the amount of miles that they want me to use, because the only way they can charge you money is if you go over those miles. And then second, in the next 2 years,
you're
going to want the new car any damn way. So what are you talking about?
I agree.
That's the only. That's
my,
all I'm giving y'all right now. That's it.
For that same reason, because I know I'm going to trade
go
it.
Go ahead and lease a car for 2 years and get the new one in
Look,
two more years.
Do what I do. I have a 2003 Escalade with 22,000 miles on it. That Escalade you had in the Thornton Bowls video,
yes.
I have one, okay?
And there you have
you
it.
You had
so.
One.
Leave it at that.
That place probably still broken down on the side of the block over there.
Yeah, man.
You have another. You have some nice. You have.
And meanwhile, he's talking about leasing cars, but he had a $12,000 bottle of liquor on Instagram last night.
Man, that was amazing.
That's at least right there.
McAllen M, like age 50 years plus.
All right, well,
that's my new thing, by the way.
What's that?
That's my vice. Like
a
buying
$12,000 bottle of liquor.
No, like the liquors that have been aged in barrels for so damn long. Gotcha. I know you got the Remy V, and then I know
Remy,
you
baby.
Know what's the top of the line Remy that y'all get?
1738.
So look, every alcohol has different top of the line joints. Mm-hmm. So while people out here,
Louis XIII actually is the top of the line for Remy.
Louis XIII, but they have the Louis cask, which is the black bottle, which is like $30,000. That's why I'm telling you about it.
Gotcha.
That's my vice. I have to drink that.
Right.
And people will call me stupid for that, but damn it, that's my vice.
I remember for Shaka's birthday. Yeah. For Shaka's birthday, we were all drinking. He has some type of bottle stashed away with the bartender that no one else was allowed
to
drink.
He'd be over that because he on that tequila, man. What is it? The 1942
he was like, hey,
Don Julio.
He was like, can you give me a 1942? I asked, and they were like, is this for Shaka? Or right. I was like, yes, this is for Shaka. It's not for
that's
me.
That's his Casa Dragones. There you go.
This is a good tequila right here.
This is great.
Yeah, let's all have a shot for Luda. You got the movie and album coming out.
Let's do that. We can do that on camera.
Man, she got $400 out of the bottle. I don't want to open this right now.
Nah, you got to do it. Special occasions, man. At this point, listen, it's like they take all of the impurities out of stuff. It's more like medicine. It's not even alcohol. You wake up the next day feeling better than you did if you did not drink anything.
Grab some cups.
All right, well, let's do it. It's the Breakfast Club. It's Luda.